Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
When you got hurt last year, was that a humbling experience just watching rather than doing what you love to do?
It definitely was. But I think it was more so for people around me to see, you know, what type of person I am. Can he continue to do what he was doing before he got hurt? I think I closed those people's mouths with coming out, you know, how I returned from, you know, that injury and to go on and, you know, miss the All-Star, but go on and win a batting title. And that's, you know, you can't vote on that. You had to earn that. So I think that was enough for me.
Chicago White Sox shortstop Tim Anderson, the defending AL batting champ, talking about last season and coming back from the injury and hanging on to win his first batting title. We are going to talk some White Sox baseball now. In order to do that, we have to go out and get another one of the best voices in town, and that is Scott Merkin, who covers the White Sox for MLB.com. And Scott, as always, appreciate you taking time out to join us. I hope Arizona is being good to you so far.
So far, I need to invest in a little sunscreen at this point. Though I know people in Chicago probably don't want to hear that, but it's getting warm real quick out here in Arizona.
Well, that's why you're there.
Exactly.
I'd hate to
would kind of defeat the purpose to have spring training in Chicago, I guess, right?
Yeah, I would hate to see him do that. So we'll get to the White Sox in a minute, but we're coming off a rather heated conversation with our callers. We visited with Gonzo, Mark Gonzalez, about a half hour ago and got him started on this whole Astros thing. And I know I, for one, the more I've had a chance to think about it, the more I've read and heard, have become more and more outraged that I don't really care how much they fine the Astros. I don't care how many draft picks they take away from them. I don't understand how they cannot take the trophy and the rings away and declare them forfeiting the championship. And I don't know, you know, what your thoughts are on that and what you're hearing from some of the White Sox about it.
You know, I will say the Sox, for the most part, have not had a ton to say about this. You know, I know Yasmani Grandal at Sox Fest had a few comments because he was part of the Dodgers team that lost to Houston in the World Series, and really not much said, you know, during spring training. I will say this. I've never been one for the, you know, the vacating of the titles. And I know you are a Michigan person, as I am. And, you know, we went through the Fab Five era there. And they took the banners down. And to me, that's just idiotic because I watched the games. I saw them play in two championships. You can say all you want about, you know, you take the title away. And to me, it's just, I just don't get, I mean, I think almost the punishment they're going through now being scrutinized like this is worse than, I think, having the title taken away. It just, to me, it doesn't erase what happened. Another example, when Michigan played in the championship against Louisville, just because Louisville vacated that because of the Rick Pitino situation doesn't mean Michigan is the champion on that. It just means, you know, they took a title that everyone watched Louisville win away from them. So, you know, I do hope, I understand this is a huge situation. It's been something that's been, you know, really just shocking into the scope of the whole thing. I do hope at some point we get to baseball. I understand a lot of people are upset. I understand a lot of players, rightfully so, are really upset. You know, I'm not out there trying to, you know, guess with the pitcher or guess with the hitter. I'm in the press box watching it or on the field talking to guys after that or in the, you know, the clubhouse before or after that. But, you know, I do hope at some point we get to baseball and hopefully get a little sense of normalcy back into the season.
Just one real quick follow-up on that, though, Scott. And again, there's no right or wrong here. There's just opinions. But
sure.
In my mind, you just reinforced my opinion because the very clear difference is neither Michigan or Louisville cheated on the court. I mean, this was cheating in the playing of the game. And yet, you know, just for recruiting violations, it wasn't even recruiting violations, actually. It was paying players, basically, which is something very different. It had nothing to do with
which is a violation of sorts, yeah.
Yeah, well, but it still had nothing to do with the outcome of the games. I mean, and they did take those titles away. And you know what? Maybe you're right. I don't care that I don't think the Dodgers necessarily deserve to get the title just because you take it away from Houston. But to me, though, that's kind of apples and oranges. They cheated every day they went out and played. And to me, that's what is so egregious about this.
Yeah, I mean, I see your point, and that is a good dissemination of you know, points there between what I was, you know, trying to illustrate with the recruiting violations versus what they did. And I think, you know, a decision has been made, easy for me to say. And just from, you know, quotes I've seen, the commissioner, who is going to be in Arizona, he's probably in Arizona right now, because tomorrow is the Cactus League Media Day, and he's supposed to be speaking at the event. I don't, you know, foresee him barring some sort of ironclad evidence where, you know, someone has video of someone putting on a buzzer or something like that. I just don't see this being opened up again. So I think whether people disagree, and obviously people are infuriated, that is a given. I mean, it was an interesting dynamic in just PR nightmares from the whole thing with the, you know, the situation where the reporter was not allowed in when Justin Verlander was talking because of a personal issue they had there, to that horrible, horrible situation with the vice president who's no longer with the team, and I think out of baseball, right? Brandon Taubman, I believe his name is. And then, you know, to the whole thing with the cheating. I mean, it's just, you know, from a team that was kind of enjoyable to watch to just kind of, I don't want to say the scourge of baseball, but certainly has drawn fire and scorn from pretty much everyone around baseball. And it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, but it does not sound like, and again, I'm not plugged into the exact information that's going on. You know, with the Sox being a little far away from championship timber the last few years, it didn't affect them as much. But although it was Danny Farquhar and Kevin Smith, the battery that kind of, they were kind of the smoking gun, right? The whistleblower, in effect, to call attention to this when they changed the signs, I believe on an Evan Gattis at bat it was. But it does not sound like this is going to be reopened again. So I think, you know, people can be angry. People can be infuriated. At some point, they're going to have to move on and just, you know, have those feelings and know it's just not going to change. This is just not something they're going to switch.
You mentioned the White Sox have not been quite up to championship caliber the past couple years. What about the next couple? What about this season? Let's start previewing the White Sox a little bit. Obviously, a very, very productive offseason. Where do you expect the biggest impact to be made from the newcomers, and what maybe is the, what still is the outstanding concern with this team, and where it still needs to answer some questions?
You know, it's interesting. I wrote about this a week ago, before the day before spring training started. You know, they have an all-star catcher from last year. James McCann was an all-star, had a great first half, was really kind of a revelation behind the plate. You know, Lucas Giolito unsolicitedly talked about him almost every start about how much in sync they were. And I mean, Lucas Giolito's results speak for themselves. He was tied for sixth in the, AL Cy Young voting, and, you know, now has pretty much put himself atop the White Sox rotation. But I do think, even with that said, with James McCann, you know, probably the biggest impact of anyone they added was Yasmani Grandal. Just because, you know, he was the first one. He was kind of like the John Lester situation for the Cubs. You know, John Lester, the team was getting better. I think the young guys might have been a little bit behind where the Sox guys were. There were a few guys up there already for the Cubs, but they were at least on their way. And he bought into the vision, and he bought into it long-term, and that's the same thing that Yasmani Grandal has done. Now, granted, you know, 4 years and $73 million would get a lot of people to buy into things, but I think Grandal really liked what he saw with the young pitching. He liked what he saw with that lineup, and I think his impact is far-reaching. He's going to help the lineup. You know, he's a power hitter. He gets on base. He walked 108 times last year. They were not a good on-base percentage team last year. They're not a very patient team. And he's phenomenal with the pitchers, you know, great pitch framer, which is sort of a newish metric in the last two or three years. Exceptional at kind of digging into what makes each pitcher tick. And I think, you know, pairing with him and James McCann, and you have a young guy like Zach Collins on the horizon, that's, you know, as strong as you can hope for in that position. So, again, I think Keiko is a nice addition, and Gio Gonzalez and Edwin Encarnacion and Steve Cishek and Nomar Mazara. But I think Grandal might ultimately be the guy who they look back and say, you know, this was what's not only set up the whole offseason, but kind of set up the next move in the rebuild for the White Sox.
We are visiting with Scott Merkin of MLB.com on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Real quick, Scott, I got to digress. We have a texter who's very unhappy with us. You should be talking about Daytona 500, big crash at end, driver may be seriously injured, blah, blah, blah. You obviously joined us late. We just talked about this 15 minutes ago, described it in some of the gory detail. It is not a video you should watch if you are the faint of heart. Ryan Newman's car flipped three times and crossed the finish line on its hood in flames. He was removed from the car and taken to the hospital. I don't know what this texter thinks we can do from Chicago while he's in the hospital in Florida, and there is no word yet. We are doing everything we can to get more information, as are his fellow drivers and everybody else. Right now, our thoughts are with Ryan Newman. There is no report from the hospital yet as to what kind of condition he may be in. And we will get you word as soon as we have it. So, Scott, getting back to the White Sox, the thing that continues to puzzle me is I like everything Rick Hahn, well, almost everything Rick Hahn has done over the last 3 years. I think he's done a remarkable turnaround with this team, not only from having a losing team, but having a losing team with one of the worst farm systems in baseball, to have acquired all these prospects and now being one of the most promising young teams in Major League Baseball. But I was around in 15 in the winter and spring before the Cubs came out of nowhere and took off, because every one of their kids hit. And nobody was really predicting. Everybody thought they were still a year or two away. Now here with the White Sox, people are predicting playoffs. I think I just read that they've got the sixth lowest odds to win the World Series. And it's based on a lot of guys who've never played a major league game before. And so it feels like not the Sox, but a lot of the fan base and a lot of the media is getting out in front of themselves a little bit until we see some of these kids.
Well, I think one thing about you have to keep in mind, and I'm pretty sure I have this right, is, you know, the odds can be changed by people betting out there, right? I mean, this is not like...
Well, that's what sets the odds, yeah.
They're set a certain way, but I think that speaks more to people who may be looking for a sleeper. You know, maybe we're looking for a sleeper in the White Sox and where they can make some money off it, or, you know, just Sox fans going out and betting on them to win the World Series. I think in all my trips over the years to Las Vegas, even before the Cubs had this remarkable run from 15 through last year, even when they were not very good team, their odds usually were not horrible in the World Series because people bet them so often. So we'll move that part up. But I do agree with you. I do agree that, you know, on paper gets you nothing except a lot of talk in January through March. And then it starts, you know, then you start going. I mean, this team will have to prove it on the field. There's no question about it. Now, I will say, if you look at what Eloy Jimenez did last year, you know, he started as an example of a young guy who hadn't played before. He talked to us today and said that, you know, the contract that he signed before seeing a pitch or playing one regular season half inning defensively in left field did affect him a little bit, because it was a big contract for that sort of parameter. And he felt like he had to go out there and do more and had to prove everything all at once. Once he settled down, he had a great September. Now, granted, there are a lot of guys who had great Septembers, and in that September, they were completely, you know, out of the picture. There was no chance to make the playoffs or anything else. So a lot of relaxation there. But yeah, I think they're saying the right things. I think at this point in the rebuild, when as Rick Hahn has said, the end of the beginning phase is kind of done, you have to be optimistic and you have to push it out there. And, you know, if they're not saying that, it's tough to sell past them. I mean, you can't go in there and say, well, we think we'll be okay, but, you know, we're not sure what we're going to have. We'll hopefully be 500. I think quietly, if they finish this year, you know, 83 to 86 wins and don't make the playoffs, that's a great season for them. That they'll be thrilled by that. 2021, from what I understand, always was the target year for the rebuild. And I think it's even more so by the fact that, you know, Kopech is hurt, and he was hurt, and he won't be back until probably May, middle of May. Carlos Rodon is probably not coming back till after the All-Star break. You have a guy like Zach Birdie, who was a first round pick a few years ago, who is just coming back from Tommy John and knee surgery. So I think some of the injuries affected it too. And that's another thing, is health. You know, health's going to be a big thing. They have some depth now, but they still have depth that's a little bit away. So I think the main reason for the excitement is because of just the difference in perception in this group. You know, 2018, they ended, and Moncada had 2017 that'd be a lot of strikeouts, 217 strikeouts. And Jose Abreu was coming off a couple weird injuries that limited his production. Lucas Giolito had an awful year. You know, Tim Anderson hit 240 that year. And now you flash forward a year, Tim Anderson had the highest batting average in baseball, won the AL batting title. Moncada was, you know, one of the highest war guys in baseball and the best position player on the White Sox. Abreu led the American League in RBIs. Lucas Giolito was a Cy Young contender. You know, Aaron Bummer had a breakout year in the bullpen. So I think that perception plus a very good offseason gives this, you know, kind of glow going in. But you're absolutely right. They've earned nothing but the fact that people are optimistic. You know, I mean, they could just as easily be 73 and 89 as they could be 89 and 73. We'll start seeing what's going to really happen. I don't even think the next few weeks in Cactus League play. I think more, you know, March 26th when they open at home against Kansas City.
Scott, forgetting for a minute Jose Altuve's probably imaginary tattoo, what can you tell us about Lewis Robert's new ink on his neck? I believe the word warrior and what that maybe says about his mindset heading into a season with just almost impossible expectations.
Yeah, he told us it was a warrior in Chinese, and he said, you know, just that's kind of the mentality you have when you come over from Cuba. And I'll tell you, watching him yesterday, I was standing with Kenny Williams and watching him, and it looks like someone who would do real well playing for the Bears. You know, I could see him suiting up and playing defensive back or something along those lines. I mean, Kenny told a story about when Kenny and Rick Hahn were in the Dominican for, I guess, his initial workout. They were kind of standing there, and he started walking towards them. And as he got closer, Rick Hahn turned to Kenny and said, "Am I crazy, or is this the Under Armour mannequin walking towards us?" And Kenny said, "Yeah, I think you're right." You know, but as Kenny pointed out, and this goes to what you were saying, Hub, you know, he said there's a lot of guys who look good getting off the bus or look good in a uniform and can't play. He said Lewis Robert can play. I will say this across the board from people I've talked to, other teams, scouts, you know, players who know him. If Robert is not a standout player, I think it would be a big surprise. He is. Now, again, you're right. He hasn't played a single inning above AAA. He hasn't played one inning of Major League Baseball on the regular season level. But I think in terms of the big picture long term, this could be the guy who's, you know, kind of the fulcrum of the rebuild.
Scott, and again, I have absolutely nothing negative to say about the White Sox right now.
Oh, yeah.
It just feels like people are getting out in front of themselves, and let's wait and see.
No, I agree. I agree with you. I think, you know, but I think it's been so long. You know, I mean, they have not had a winning season since 2012 when they, you know, fell out. They were in first place 117 days and just fell hard the last couple weeks. They haven't been to the playoffs since 08. You know, they won in 05. And, you know, winning titles is a very difficult thing to do, obviously. You know, no team has repeated since the Yankees. And I think no National League team has repeated since the Big Red Machine. So I think and then they've gone through, you know, let's face it, three designed kind of miserable years. So I think it's all about optimism. And you're right. Maybe we're all getting caught up in a little bit. But, I mean, we're basically reporting what they're saying. You know, I think anyone on our beat has said, oh, yeah, this is a slang. You know, let's start booking hotel reservations in L.A. for the World Series for October because here they come. But although, you know, you can always cancel those hotel reservations a couple weeks ahead of time if you have to. But I think it's just they're very optimistic. They're very upbeat. And it's a different feeling from what they've gone through. You know, the last couple of years they might have said, oh, you know, we're in this. We're going to compete. We may surprise some people. They knew they weren't going to win. Last year they were a decent team at the All-Star break, had a couple injuries and started the second half 4-16, and it was pretty much done. This year, they believe they're going to be competitive, and I think it's manifesting itself in a lot of kind of big predictions early on here in February.
Unfortunately, we got to run because I'm getting backed up for another guest, but I've got to ask you before we go what I think is one of the biggest questions about their ability to contend this year. What about the injured arms coming back, specifically Rodon, Kopech, and Dunning? What are you seeing so far?
Yeah, I mean, Kopech is looking great. You know, I think, you know, they're going to let him build up some innings in Charlotte. I think they're also going to keep him out of the cold of April in Chicago and the Midwest, for that matter. You know, Rodon had his surgery a little later in May, so he'll probably be back second half. And I talked to him today and wrote about it today, that he's, you know, strident about he is a starter and he wants to show that that's his job and he's coming back for it. And Dunning told me the other day he feels great. You know, he's been throwing bullpens. He's throwing all his pitches and, you know, may help by the end of the year. So right now it's all a positive outlook for those three.
All righty, Scott, thank you. Great report. Sounds like things are extremely promising early in training camp. That is Scott Merkin from MLB.com with the Chicago White Sox. We've now gotten full updates from both sides of the city as to what's going on in Arizona on the baseball beat. We're going to switch back to football. Hopefully Joel Corey is not too upset with us because we'll be about 5 minutes late getting to him. But we're going to talk some NFL, some salary cap, some free agency with Joel Corey of CBSSports.com in just a moment right here on The Score.
When I got picked by the Bears, I knew right away when my brother and my dad both looked at me with a look of jealousy and disgust. You get to go play in Chicago. How lucky are you? And from the day that I got to O'Hare and from the first officer I shook hands with when I stepped off the plane, it's been a family affair. It's been something that has had ups and downs, but the loyalty's been there since day one. No entirety of a population is perfect. I'm not perfect every day, but I strive to be better. I think Chicago sees that, and I want to stay involved in the city and within the athletic realm.
That was Bears Pro Bowl guard Kyle Long, a three-time Pro Bowler, just recently retired, and discussing his career with the Bears, who he intends to be a Bear for life and retire with the franchise eventually. So thanks for being with us on 670 The Score. I am Hub Arkish. I'm Arthur Arkish, excuse me, joined by Hub Arkish. Not used to wearing that hat, I guess. And we are pleased now to be joined by Joel Corey of CBS Sports. Joel is a former NFL agent who is kind enough to drop by for a few minutes and discuss what promises to be a wild offseason in the NFL. Hey, Joel, it's great to be with you. I'm sorry that we are a few minutes behind, but thanks so much for taking the time. Joel, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hey, Joel, Arthur Arkish and Hub Arkish, thanks so much for being with us. We're sorry we're a few minutes late. How's everything going tonight?
No complaints on my end.
Outstanding. Yeah, as I had mentioned to the listeners, Joel Corey writes for CBS Sports. He is a former NFL agent who knows the salary cap intricacies and the NFL market about as well as anyone. And Joel, let's just tee it up like this. When was the last time we saw this unique of a veteran QB market when you look at both impending free agents and a few likely trade candidates? You don't hear often. It looks like maybe this might be even oversaturated with veteran quarterbacks.
Never. typically, if you have one or two veterans available, then that's a lot. But this is a first time I can remember where supply is going to exceed demand in probably a big way. So there could be someone who's the odd man out in what could be quarterback musical chairs.
Joel, I'm curious, and forgive me if this isn't something that you've studied, but I'm guessing that you at least have a passing awareness of this based on this quarterback market. You've got three quarterbacks in particular who were assuming their teams would like to move on from, and I'm talking about Nick Foles in Jacksonville, Cam Newton in Carolina, and Andy Dalton in Cincinnati. Dalton's contract is the easiest. There's 1 year left, and it's like $17 million guaranteed, and I believe if you trade him, that's what you're inheriting. But with still remaining bonus money that has been spread over the deals of Foles and Newton, it's a little hard to get your arms around, or for me to get my arms around, I should say, exactly what kind of cap ramifications that has for a team that is inquiring them, because as as I've looked at this, I originally thought that Foles would be the most punitive, but now it seems to me that it's the Jaguars who would have to eat all of the unpaid bonus money, and that all you'd be getting with Foles is the $15.5 million salary this year and whatever's left in the base salaries on that contract. Is that correct, or can you explain to us how that might work?
Yeah, well, first I'll talk Cam first. He's kind of like Dalton from the standpoint that he's in the final year of a contract. He's making 19.1 in total salary and a cap number of 21.1. So whether they cut him or trade him, they'd pick up 19.1 million in cap room of Cam. The problem is, how healthy is he? Dalton, there is, if you cut him, it's 17.70 pickup. There's no proration left over. Foles, the problem is that the 2020 year is fully guaranteed. 15.125, the base salary is fully guaranteed. That was guaranteed at signing. Now, if he's on the roster the third day of the league year, then $5 million of his 2021 salary is guaranteed. So they're not, because if you cut him, the guarantee has an offset, so you get to recoup something, but you're not going to take the cap hit between giving him a $25 million signing bonus. So right there, that's prorated $4 million on the cap, $6.25 million on the cap each year. So you've got 3 years of that proration, plus you'd have the guarantee amount as well. So the only way he's gone is if they trade him. They can't afford to take the type of cap hit that you'd have with Foles if you cut him, because they're not in a great cap situation to begin with right now as it is.
Right. But so just to be clear, though, the teams, excuse me, a team acquiring Cam Newton, you're obviously going to keep him, and you're acquiring that contract. So unless you extend the deal and spread some of that money down the road, you're going to take a $19 million hit for his salary for this year, $17.7 for Dalton. With Foles, if you're the team that were to, if the Jaguars were going to do this, if you traded for him, all you would be obligated for, if the Jaguars were willing to just eat, I think it's a $30 million dead money hit or something like that. If they were willing to eat that, the team that acquired him would only be responsible cap-wise for his base salaries, right?
Yeah, well, in the trade, it's different. In the trade, it's 18.75 is your dead money. The cap number is 21.875 right now because the new team would be taking on the rest of the contract, 2020, 2021, and 2022. So, the salary this year between base and roster bonuses, workout bonuses, $15,875. But I would suspect in order to do that, you're probably going to have to eat some money out the door, convert something into signing bonus, so then your cap number is going up. But with all the quarterbacks available, you could get through trade. I know he's under contract for more than 1 year, but he may be last in the pecking order.
Yeah, interesting. That's kind of the way I interpret it, too. It's it may be unfortunate for the Bears, who have three of his former coaches on their staff, and a huge question, obviously, behind center with Mitch Trubisky. Joel, it's kind of funny. When I reached out to you Friday to see if we could get you on the show, one of the topics I had in mind was a Lions trade rumbling or report that came out from a local TV station last week, I believe. But that was regarding Matthew Stafford, and now the reports today, and I saw Adam Schefter had it initially. I don't think it's one of the worst kept secrets this offseason that the Lions are will be motivated to move Darius Slay. Did you think there was any chance, any validity to the Stafford report? And then B, what do you expect a Darius Slay market to look like and how the Lions could potentially make out there?
No, I don't. I've never thought that Stafford would be traded. I'll believe it when I see it, because right before the end of the regular season, they decided to create cap room for 2020. That's something the Falcons did. Typically, you don't go to the trouble of doing a restructure that early for a guy you intend to trade. Now, his is a little complicated because there's a option bonus, which is tied to exercising a year, which is ultimately going to void, not be there down the road. But for now, his cap number has dropped from 31.5 to 27.6. Mm-hmm. If they exercise the option, it drops even further to 21.3. But then the window to exercise the option is pretty big. It's one of the biggest I've ever seen between the first day of the league year and the start of the regular season. If you traded him before exercising the option, then your cap hit is 24.8 in dead money. If you do it after the option, try to trade him then, it'd be $32 million. So if they exercise the option, he is going absolutely nowhere. I still don't think he will anyway, because you wouldn't have gone to the trouble of restructuring his contract. Now right. To Slay, he was someone that was on the trading block last year. He wants a new contract. 2020 is his last year. He's under contract for $10.5 million total salary. He'll want to be the highest paid corner. That'll be like, that market's been stagnant for years. I expect Byron Jones to get it 16 or something around there. So Slay will want that until Jalen Ramsey, if the Rams decide to extend him, blows it all out of the water. Denver supposedly had some interest. Last year, Chris Harris is up there. They'll need a corner, so that may be the landing spot.
Bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Coach Fitz and Northwestern Football returns to Wrigley Field on November 7th as they host Wisconsin. Guarantee a ticket to this matchup with the purchase of season tickets. Buy now at NUSports.com. And we are visiting with Joel Corey of CBSSports.com with a lot more salary cap expertise than I have. I do know that. And Joel, we've got some of the other failed young veterans, if you will, who are unrestricted free agents, specifically Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, both most likely to be moving on. There was a report right at the end of the season that Jameis Winston wanted $30 million a year. Jameis Winston, at this point, I would think would be lucky to get anything more than a 1 year prove it deal. And that's assuming that somebody signs him to be their starter as opposed to a backup who they might try and develop a little bit. I'm not even sure what the perception of Marcus Mariota is around the league at this point. What have you heard or what are your thoughts on those two players' movement?
Well, Bruce Arians has made some very interesting comments about Jameis Winston ever since he blew that final game against the Falcons. They do have two tags available, as long as it's not a new CBA. All teams do. Franchise in transition. He did lead the league in passing yards, but also became the first person to have 30 interceptions and 30 touchdowns in the same year. It wouldn't surprise me if they have two tags available that they stuck the transition tag on him and wanted to see if anyone else would take him. And they have to decide about the offer sheet, yes or no, to match it. He made $21 million last year, so they were comfortable paying him $21 million. I think he's got a better shot of being a starter than Marcus Mariota does, because that team was on the road to a top-five pick before they made the quarterback switch. He really has to look for a situation where there's a potentially vulnerable starter and go there on a one-year prove-it deal. And if things don't work out, maybe he can do what Tannehill did to him. And you guys have a guy that should – you guys should be looking to bring in someone who has some sort of experience behind Mitchell Trubisky. The question to me is, do you pick up the option for the fifth year, which you have to do before May 3rd, which would be guaranteed on an injury basis only, and it's going to be right around $25 million.
What do you think about that, Joel? We've seen the Bears in recent years. They actually declined the fifth-year option on Kyle Fuller. It was obviously different circumstances. He was coming off a lost season following arthroscopic knee surgery with the prior regime, but they ended up declining the fifth-year option, putting the transition tag on him, and then locking him up long-term. Is it too risky with Mitch to potentially pick this up just because he hasn't started a full season yet? How much will the injury guarantee be in Ryan Pace's mind, do you expect?
Probably not that much, because I think Pace is married to Mitchell Trubisky for better or worse. And if the Bears don't do well, he's going to go down with that ship. They're probably going to get rid of a fifth year option this year. Leonard Floyd, 13 and some change is the fifth year option. Right. As long as you get rid of him before the first day of the league year, you pick up that amount of cap room for him. So I think they may have learned the lesson from Kyle Fuller, because what if Trubisky puts all together as a quarterback? Then you got to franchise him and pay him, as opposed to having the fifth-year option and going, you know what, you put it together 1 year, we'll be more comfortable if you do it again, and then we can franchise you if necessary. And then I think if he gets through the season healthy, assuming they exercise the option, and he doesn't play all that well, they would just let it go and go find another quarterback for a long-term solution.
Joel, outside of the quarterbacks, and we haven't even talked about Brady and Breeze and Rivers, and I don't know your thoughts. I don't see Brady and Breeze playing anywhere but New England and New Orleans, and we know Rivers isn't going to be with the Chargers. But beyond, and if you want to offer an opinion on that, please do. But what I was going to ask you is, beyond the quarterbacks, there's some guys who are really going to get paid. Who's the biggest dollar guy out there? I've kind of got my eye on Jadeveon Clowney, even though he isn't necessarily a double-digit sack guy. I think Brandon Scherff is going to command a ton of money, even though he's an offensive guard. Who do you think could be the biggest winner in this free agency group?
Clowney, because Shaquille Barrett's not going to hit the open market. He'll get tagged one way or another by Tampa. That Monday Night Football game against the 49ers will get Clowney paid. One thing he did this year, which I'm sure teams took note of, was he had that core muscle injury, could have shut it down and decided, you know what, I want to get right for free agency, but played through it, even though he didn't play up to his full capability. He is a guy that does get decent, pretty good pressure on a quarterback, even though it doesn't translate into sacks. Sometimes sacks are a little bit lucky as opposed to consistently putting pressure on him, on a quarterback. I think he's going to be a $20 million per year player. I think you're right about Scherff, assuming that they do not franchise him, and the last guard to be franchised was Logan Mankins in 2011. So he'll become the highest paid guard if he hits the open market. And there's a right tackle that is in the same boat Kyle Fuller was in. Injury play, third season, Jack Conklin, great fourth year. They can't put a tag on him. They've got two other priorities for a tag, if you still have the use of two, in Tennessee, and Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry. Jack Conklin is going to get paid a lot of money.
And then, Joel, just one more question. We appreciate, again, your time. We're going to let you run. Joel Coria, CBS Sports, nice enough to break down some NFL salary cap, some offseason free agency approaching with the combine next week. I believe a report just surfaced today or in the past 24, 48 hours mentioning the Bears among five teams that need to still get cap compliant. They're over $200 million, I believe, in promises on the cap. You had mentioned Leonard Floyd, and perhaps he they either, I don't know if they do an extension or they just cut him and gain that $13 million. Any other solutions you see for them? An Allen Robinson extension, perhaps? I know Prince Amukamara's name has been rumored as a potential cap casualty, but what else do you think they need to do here to be in position to, again, go out and try and stabilize quarterback? And they've got some other needs as well, of course.
Yeah, the cap commitments don't reflect the fact that you had over $14.5 million of carryover room, so it's not quite as bad as it looks, but it's still not great by any stretch of the imagination. You're right, Allen Robinson would be an extension candidate. You signed him when he took off a torn ACL for $14 million a year. Now he's healthy, so you know that's going to be closer to $18 or $19. Mm-hmm. Taylor Gabriel, that's one guy. I'd look at asking to take a pay cut or cutting outright. You'd pick up $4.5 million in cap room that way. Khalil Mack's got a $26.6 million cap hit. You restructured it last year. Maybe you do something again for him. But I don't think Floyd is going to come back and play in that fifth-year option for $13.22 million. Usually guys won't take a pay cut on a fifth-year option, even though Devontae Parker's one of the few who did that last year and then extended for a year. So you're going to get some relief from Leonard Floyd one way or another.
Okay. And again, as unusual as this quarterback market is, there's a lot of potential edge alternatives out there too. So maybe the Bears end up taking that money and seeing if they can spend it a little bit more wisely and say thank you, but let Leonard Floyd get on his way. We are going to say thank you and let Joel Coria get on his way. Joel, we really appreciate it. Great stuff from you. I'm sorry again, we were running a few minutes behind tonight. We hope you'll come back and join us once again though.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All righty,
guys. That is Joel Coria from CBSSports.com. Joel, also an extensive resume representing players and has made himself clearly a bit of an expert on the salary cap. We've already got the texters going on this. Zero chance the Bears don't pick up fifth year. I think that must be in relation to Trubisky because they already did pick up the fifth year on Floyd.
Oh, yeah. It's on Mitch. And I suspect they're right. I think the cons outweigh the pros of doing that. You're playing with fire there.
I don't really agree. I just, you know, it is guaranteed for injury only. And so the only way you get stuck with it is if he has a season ending injury. And you saw how it worked out with Kyle Fuller when they didn't. I just don't think it's that big a deal one way or the other, whether they pick up the fifth year option, because you got the tags to work with. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you do take a risk if you pick it up and he proves this year that he's not the guy. So I don't know what they're going to do. I just don't think it's a slam dunk one way or the other. I actually don't totally agree on the Leonard Floyd scenario, only because the issue is you already are without a starting inside linebacker, without a starting safety. If you cut Floyd, now you're without a starting outside linebacker too. And that $13 million that you're saving isn't enough to pay two of them, let alone three of them anyway. Mm-hmm. So you're creating a problem by fixing a problem. I don't know what the right answer is. But he did, Joel just did mention that, you know, you have Devontae Parker who did redo his deal and then played his way into a contract extension. I wouldn't at all rule out the possibility that Leonard Floyd would be willing to extend that deal by a year, relieve the cap pain this year. He's still going to get the money, and then maybe see if he can earn himself a new contract. So we'll see how that plays out. Guys, Joel was our last guest of the evening. We got about an hour and 20 minutes left. We're going to do nothing but conversation here, and your phone calls, 312-644-6767 is the phone number. Anything you want to talk about, Bears free agency, draft, we can also get back to, we had a spirited conversation going about how you feel about the Houston Astros being allowed to keep their 2017 Major League Baseball World Series title. Has Rob Manfred totally screwed the pooch here? Do you think that the punishment fits the crime? What are your feelings about that? Anything else that you want to get into? We can certainly do it right here at The Score. Again, 312-644-6767. We are back in just a moment.
Good news is that we've done a great job of getting out, and we have obviously the largest satellite provider, the largest streaming provider, and dozens of other different cable networks around. We're going to have a much broader reach under Marquis than we did in the old under the old regime. And I would tell people that, look, you know, first of all, if it really concerns you, just call Comcast and let them know. But secondly, you know, these types of discussions typically go like this. They don't go quickly. They're fairly complicated. You know, it's not uncommon for these kind of discussions to end up like this. And then thirdly, I'm just confident because I think that in the end, everyone will do what's right for the actual customers. And that's where I'm confident that we'll get all this behind us by opening day or pretty soon anyway.
Okay, now I'm pissed. I wonder if Tom Ricketts realizes what a complete asshat he just sounded like. That's one of the most unbelievable cuts I've ever heard. The Chicago Cubs aren't doing what's right by their customers. I'm a Comcast subscriber. That's where I get my TV delivery from. I'm not smart enough to be a cord cutter and know how to stream. I don't have DirecTV. And it is not Comcast's fault that they don't have the Cubs games right now. I mean, what, Ricketts has offered it to him for free? They're just refusing to take it? Does he think we're complete idiots? That was an outrageous quote. I can't believe I just heard that.
Well, let's next we're going to play his tongue-in-cheek remark about how he actually subscribes to both DirecTV and Comcast, and he guesses he's going to have to cancel one of them this season. The lack of awareness, right? I mean, it's just...
That was the most arrogant, tone-deaf thing I've ever heard in my life.
It's pretty bad. I can't disagree.
Marquee Network.
I mean, because that's the other, you know, I've been asking fans, if you want to call and tell us how you feel about this whole Astros thing, give you a chance to vent. Now I want you to call and tell me how you feel about something else. How are you going to feel if come opening day you have Comcast and you cannot watch the Chicago Cubs? I mean, you know, this guy really doesn't get it, apparently, to say something that stupid, because that's what I think that was.
It was also kind of ironic to hear him talking about how these are how these conversations tend to go. And if you have a real problem with just call Comcast, well, we all know that Tom Ricketts has never been on the phone with a Comcast representative. And
that's a great point.
It probably
because
isn't
you can't
overly
get one on the phone.
Exactly. It isn't familiar with how those conversations go. So that's what I was thinking in the back of my head. But it is infuriating, Hub, and I'm glad to hear you let him have it
I mean,
a little bit.
He treats us like we're complete idiots. I mean, Comcast hasn't signed up just because you want to give it to them for nothing, but you know they're just being jerks. Obviously, they feel you're overcharging, Tom, and I don't know anything about the negotiations or how many more billions the Cubs are trying to make. We knew this was potentially an issue before they ever did this, and they are now 5 weeks away from opening day. And I happened to read this today. Forgive me if it's not accurate, but this is the one source that I read that said half of Chicago TV gets its delivery through Comcast or Xfinity or whatever it's called right now. Okay. So he has now taken his games away from half of the market, and he has the arrogance to sit there and say, if you're upset about it, call Comcast. That was outrageous. That was the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Give us a call. Let us know what you think about it. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. God knows it won't be the first time. But we're going to get back to the phone lines, 312-644-6767. And Terry is with us first on the South Side. Terry, how you doing?
What's up, Terry? You with us?
I think that is pretty crazy because they think Cub fans are just paying the money no matter what. Some people will change that at Hulu just to hear the Cubs. But I just wanted to make a statement about thinking about the White Sox. White Sox can have a good team this year. And I don't know, when Levine comes on, he never talks about the Sox too much. He always talks about the brand stuff. Let's see what's going on from Sox camp. That's all I got to say. Bye.
All righty, Terry. Well, thank you for the phone call. We do appreciate it, guys. We've got a full hour left. We are going to talk Sox. We're going to talk Cubs. Going to talk NFL. Going to talk...
68 convention and 69 Woodstock and Hub's part in all of it.
I had no part in Woodstock. I enjoyed the movie. I know that. I saw it the day it came out, and it was great fun, and I've probably seen it 15 times since. We'll talk a little 68, not a whole lot. We're going to do that in just a moment right here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.